From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on July 9th, 2005, the official launch of what is known as the BDS movement. BDS stands for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, aimed at Israel regarding the treatment of Palestinians. The founders of BDS had South Africa in mind, reasoning that Israel is deserving of the same kind of condemnation that South Africa received over apartheid. And so BDS calls for nonviolent protest to remain in effect against Israel until three conditions are met. And here, let me quote directly from the movement. First, Israel must end its occupation of all Arab lands and dismantle the wall. Second, Israel must recognize the fundamental rights of the Arab-Palestinian citizens of Israel to full equality. And finally, Israel must respect, protect, and promote the rights of Palestinian refugees to return to their homes and properties as stipulated in United Nations Resolution 194. But as the New York Times notes, BDS has become one of the most controversial movements worldwide. Senator Chuck Schumer recently said that the BDS movement is anti-Semitic because it is supported by virulent anti-Semites and because the movement rejects Jews' rights to self-determination in their homeland, according to Senator Schumer. And Schumer said last March, quote, "Let us call out the BDS movement for what it is. Let us delegitimize the delegitimizers by letting the world know when there is a double standard, whether they know it or not, and they are actively participating in an anti-Semitic movement," end quote. The BDS movement has prominent supporters in governments in various places around the world and in pop culture as well. And responding to Senator Schumer, here's Joseph Levine, a member of the Academic Advisory Council of the Jewish Voice for Peace, saying, quote, "If a reasonable person can see that this right of the Jews to establish a state in Palestine is at least open to question, then it can't be a sign of anti-Semitism to simply question it. But once you admit the BDS position within the tent of the reasonable, the proper response is not, as Senator Schumer claims, delegitimizing, but rather disputing, engaging in argument carried out in the public sphere according to the rules of public reason," end quote. Well, here's why we're discussing the issue today. First of all, as of November 2018, a total of 26 American states have passed anti-BDS legislation in some form. In several states, these laws have been challenged on First Amendment grounds, on the claim that they violate citizens' freedom of speech. In 2016, Governor Andrew Cuomo released a statement calling BDS a hateful, intolerant campaign and said the New York State would not do business with organizations that fund and support BDS. And now Congress is considering anti-BDS legislation as well. This hour, we're hoping to have a thoughtful conversation about BDS, free speech, and more. And our guests this hour include Iman Abid, Chapter Director of the Genesee Valley Region of the ACLU. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
And also with us is Larry Fine, a former longtime CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester, and here today speaking only on his own behalf. Nice to have you, Larry. Thank you for being here.
Good to be here. Thanks.
I'm doing my best, even at the outset, to try to frame this as to where we are. And a lot of the conversation this hour will center on various forms of legislation in various places, free speech issues, et cetera. But I'll ask our guests if we laid it out at least fairly there, Iman. I mean, this is an issue that either I think a lot of our listeners either know a lot about or they hear BDS and they don't know very much about it at all here. How do you describe what BDS is and the controversy around it?
Yeah, I think essentially what BDS is, it's a call for Palestinian civil society to impose nonviolent measures to get Israel to comply with its obligations under international law and its denial of Palestinian rights. So what we're just calling on is for a solidarity of the Palestinian people. And fundamentally, I believe that is what the BDS movement is. And even with the new wave of those who are supporting the BDS movement, whether it's on campuses or across different academic institutions and even in government who are standing against these anti-BDS bills, are reminding us of what our duty is to stand for those who are most marginalized, not just within our own country, but across the globe. So I think you did a great job at helping present what the two arguments look like. But I think, of course, there's a lot of issues where we don't necessarily even know where what this movement actually fundamentally is.
Okay, and we're going to get to that. Larry, how do you describe it? I mean, again, I know this must come up in conversation in various quarters with those who know a lot and those who do not. How do you describe it?
Again, I think you fairly stated it, but as with almost everything in conversations about the Middle East and in particular about Israel, everything is about the nuance and the understanding of each of the words in the sentence. So part of where the challenges are in dealing with BDS and with anti-Semitism is trying to understand what exactly it means by Arab lands, for example. And that's not as simple to understand as people might presume.
Okay, so right now we have situations where at state levels you have some American states dealing with BDS in their own ways. Now you've got federal conversations. Let me ask Iman, especially from the perspective of the ACLU and free speech. we have Governor Cuomo in this state, going back to 2016. I know you're familiar with some of what he has said, calling it a hateful movement and saying New York State's not going to do business with it. Let me read an email I got just this morning after one of our listeners heard the tease for this conversation. This comes from Daniel in Geneva. He writes, as a professor emeritus of Hobart and William Smith Colleges and as a forensic economist, I am no longer able to work for or testify on behalf of the state of New York simply because I have supported the American right to boycott, divest, and sanction the apartheid state of Israel. My membership in Jewish Voices for Peace, an organization of progressive Jews and non-Jews, which also supports the right of BDS, further precludes my employment with the state of New York. Governor Cuomo pushed through this anti-American restriction in his continued pandering to those who, like evangelical Christians, put Israel first ahead of basic American rights and values. That's from Daniel. Have you heard a lot of that? Are there people saying, look, I can't even work if I've expressed an opinion on BDS?
Yes, absolutely.
You are hearing that.
Yeah, we have heard that. I mean, just recently as well, I believe sometime in the last year, the state of Israel itself, Netanyahu, claimed that if you were even involved with organizations like Jewish Voices for Peace, you weren't permitted from even entering the country. But going back to what we've seen here is I think that you have a number of different entities that are actually trying to integrate these certain policies and claiming that if you take a position on the BDS movement, we no longer want you to associate with us, which, number one, is a complete violation of the First Amendment. It goes way back down to what our ability to boycott looks like and our freedom of speech and all of that. And, you know, I say those things and I'm thinking to myself, how do we not understand that? But I think it's also, it gets really tricky as well with academic institutions depending on if they're private or if they're public, depending on, again, what sorts of policies they can actually implement. But I think when we're talking about strictly why someone is going so far as deciding that if you are a part of the BDS movement, you are no longer to be in any way associated with a certain academic institution, I think we're talking about a clear First Amendment violation right there. But I think, you know, what baffles me is speaking also personally, as you know, from my end, I am Palestinian, and I think one of the things that we don't necessarily know is exactly what the BDS movement is. And I think that comes from a lot of, you know, whether it's the lack of control and being able to navigate the conversation, especially through the media, or if it's just our lack of interest in wanting to learn more about the BDS movement. How it isn't actually anti-Semitic, and it's more of just asking for Palestinian solidarity.
Okay, so then let me ask Iman, and I'll ask Larry to follow up on this as well. So when Senator Schumer says, let's call this what it is, it's an anti-Semitic movement, whether supporters know it or not, because it rejects the right of the Jewish people of self-determination, and that it is supported by virulent anti-Semites, and you've got Governor Cuomo saying this is a hateful movement, what's the response to that? I mean, I know that in various places you have worked with people in government. I suspect you've met a lot of prominent people in government here. If you have this conversation with Senator Schumer, with Governor Cuomo, what's the message for them? I suspect you think they're wrong.
No, I mean, I don't. I will just say that having worked in politics, I think one of the things that I've noticed very quickly is that my existence as a Palestinian individual has never been recognized. I am recognized first and foremost by someone who is Muslim, but perhaps not by somebody who is Palestinian. And I think we have a complete fear. I mean, there have been plenty of times where, you know, as soon as somebody hears that I am Palestinian, it's a red flag almost for them, not wanting to go into the conversation on things like the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
It shuts the conversation
down.
Oh,
immediately. That's been my whole life. But I think I just want to go back to the root of your question.
Sure.
And I think, the argument to say that, you know, using the argument that this is an anti-Semitic movement is completely false. I think, number one, it's nonviolent. It's not even targeting Israeli citizens. It's targeting the policies that the state of Israel has enacted and integrated, and what it's actually done to the Palestinian people, whether it's the displacement of the Palestinian refugees that are in Syria and in Gaza, or if it's literally the way that Palestinians are being treated in the Israeli-occupied settlements. I think it's really important to focus primarily on the fact that we're talking about governing policies that have created this injustice against the Palestinian people. It has nothing to do with the targeting of Israeli citizens.
Okay. Larry, is there an argument for or against anti-Semitism on behalf of the BDS movement to you?
I think I would frame it as there are people who are anti-Semitic, hold anti-Semitic beliefs, say anti-Semitic things, who are part of the BDS movement, who use it as cover for anti-Semitism. But I also think that the conceptual frame of making an argument for the rights of Palestinians, for challenges of things that the Israeli government have done that are unfair to its non-Jewish citizens, as well as to those who live in the territories, are legitimate dispute, legitimate discussion, and need to be separated from whether Israel has a right to a nation. And I think often in the BDS conversation, the idea of whether Jews have a right to self-determination frequently comes up, and that's a real challenge. Part of the Jewish reaction to BDS, and here I want to be really clear, the Jewish community hasn't, you know, there's 7.5 billion people in the world. 2.4 billion are Christian, 1.6 billion are Muslim, and there's about 15 million Jews, which is a really small number, half of whom living in Israel are living in a nation state where Jews have control of their own lives for the first time since they were banished from Israel by the Romans 2,000 years ago. In those countries in which Jews were dispersed, they were not allowed full citizenship. They were not allowed, they were often boycotted, and people would not frequent their shops. So when we hear this pointed back at Jews, it's really challenging because there's the resonance, not just to the Holocaust, but to a long history of Jews living in Europe. Having said that, I also have to say very strongly that I think that means that Jews also should have a special understanding and resonance with the challenge facing Israeli Arabs and Palestinians in a solution or necessary solutions to a problem that multiple sides have fouled up for 70 years plus.
Okay, so let me, before I get to your phone calls, because I know listeners have questions or want to weigh in on this, and I know this is an emotional subject. I want to hit a few more points before we get to some of your feedback. And I want to state very clearly, I've done a lot of reading on this, but I am by no means an expert. And I find myself at various times confused about certain things. And then I think with further explanation, I think I at least find a little bit of either common ground or at least an understanding. So Larry, I admit, knowing very little about BDS, when you start reading, you say, well, look, if certain people think that the United States government is behaving in a way that they don't like, that they might boycott or protest in the streets. They may do certain things nonviolently to say, change your policy. And that on its face, BDS has the appearance of sort of a time-honored tradition of people around the world saying, we don't like the state's policy. We want you to change it. We're going to enact pressure on you to change it. And so when with that frame, I thought, well, how could that be anti-Semitic? But what you're saying is, The Jewish people have experienced certain things in their history, including boycott, sort of societal rejection, and obviously mass murder, that this takes on a different sort of ring. It's received differently. And that sensitivity we at least have to sort of understand. But I also don't hear you saying, if you don't like the policies of the state of Israel, you shouldn't be allowed to protest in certain ways. I hear you saying, understand the sensitivity there and why it may be received in certain ways and proceed as thoughtfully as you can. Is that close?
I think that's a fair restatement of what I was saying. If you get in a taxi cab in Israel, doesn't matter whether it's an Israeli Jewish driver or an Israeli Arab driver, they will criticize the government of Israel. Everyone criticizes the government of Israel, the government of the United States, the government of France, and so on. Where the BDS legislation touches on free speech, I'm in a complete agreement with him on that is not where it should be, and no professor should lose their job for something they say. And that's something that I feel very strongly, both as an American citizen and as a Jew, because we lived with those restrictions. Having said that, there are people, because I've heard presentations, I've seen videos that go beyond simply America, Israel isn't treating us fairly, you need to do something, from Palestinians and Israeli Arabs, recognizing that there is a context here about the failings of the Palestinian Authority, the failings of the Arab League going back to 1948, lots and lots of context that don't narrowly focus into the sole arguments that the BDS movement is making in terms of where I think it's more likely to get a solution to the challenge in terms of open communication than a BDS movement that often feels closed.
Okay. When it comes to legislation, though, you are, again, Larry is speaking not as a former director of the Jewish Federation in Greater Rochester, but on his own as a private citizen. You don't find yourself supporting anti-BDS legislation.
I'm really uncomfortable with the anti-BDS legislation as it's framed, both constitutionally and in terms of focusing more attention on arguments that I would prefer were framed in different ways.
And do you find yourself more often than not feeling like BDS is a cover for anti-Semitism or is a legitimate effort to change policy?
I think for some, it is a cover. I think for many, it is the latest mechanism to try and have a conversation. And I don't think it is effective in opening a conversation.
Yeah. And this is the reason I ask, because I actually think on its face, that question is sort of unfair. You know, because as Larry said, this is complex. It's nuanced. There are all kinds of movements that have people who we would maybe call fringe or extreme. And you're often sort of dealing with these debates on, well, you're running for office, but did you know who supports you? It's X, Y, and Z, and they're bad. So I'm sensitive to that. But when Chuck Schumer, for example, when Senator Schumer says, whether you know it or not, if you support BDS, it's been co-opted. It's been co-opted, it's anti-Semitic, and you have to know that. Is that too strong a statement?
For me, that's too strong a statement. I think for many in the Jewish community, they're comfortable with it. And the political calculus for the legislation is a political calculus and not a serious, thoughtful, how can America help with the conversation in Israel and with the Palestinian Authority.
Okay. And Iman, when it comes to co-opting of movements, do you find any currency with the argument that even if this was a well-intended movement, it's now been co-opted by voices that are clearly anti-Semitic?
No. I think fundamentally we're still moving in the direction of what it was supposed to be doing. In the rise of the movement, going back to the South African apartheid, which is where the same concept kind of stems from, is that this was to try to end this sort of like apartheid regime on the Palestinian people. I think we just get really uncomfortable when we're talking about this minority within an incredibly sensitive subject of and population of people. I don't want to discredit that. I think I understand the sensitivity of the topic, and I understand the sensitivity, especially when we're coming out in what seems to be a criticism of the Jewish people, but actually has nothing to do with those who are Jewish. It has everything to do with the state of Israel. And I think, again, I want to bring it back to the governing body rather than the people that are living within the state and trying to end those sorts of policies and what's actually displacing the Palestinian people and what's causing what's a clear human rights violation has been mentioned many times in the United Nations.
All right. And last question for our guests before we turn it over to our listeners for feedback here. When I hear people like Governor Cuomo, Senator Schumer talking about the right of self-determination, my mind goes to two different places. And again, I know I'm trying to sound very neutral here. What I'm trying to do is understand. In one sense, I think self-determination should be important. In another, it's also very sensitive to the idea that your self-determination does not trump other people's right to exist or have their own existence as well here. So self-determination, I'll ask both of you. Larry, is there a concern about the Jewish people and the right of self-determination in this conversation?
It's an enormous and complicated challenge. So let me just touch on it really briefly.
Sure.
There was no self-governing country of Palestine. The Ottoman Empire controlled the area for 400 or 500 years back and forth. The British and French after World War I kind of divided up the region and made arbitrary Western decisions. The United Nations, through a legal process with the British and the British mandate, partitioned the land. Israel declared its independence in 1948, and the surrounding Arab nations attacked. There were wars again in 1967. Primarily started by Egypt. There was another attack in 1973. And when Yasser Arafat and others took control of the territories, there were terrorist attacks that took place that helped create the rationale for the barrier. So those are all outside of the conversation about people who are neighbors. Those are geopolitical things on both sides of this line that have created where we are today. I believe strongly that you need to discuss and understand the context of where we got to, because from the Jewish perspective and the Israeli perspective, there were numerous opportunities, including the Oslo Accords and others, where peace processes could have moved forward. And typically, from our perspective, there was rejection by the Arab League, rejection by the neighbors. To this day, the only countries in the Middle East surrounding Israel that recognize Israel's right to exist are Egypt and Jordan, and both of those happened fairly recently in the 1970s and the 1990s.
Okay. Iman, right of self-determination, how do you view that is related to this conversation?
I think it just goes down to the existence of the Palestinian people and what rights do they have. I think, again, we shouldn't be denying somebody the rights to self-determination of the Palestinian people. I just don't think that we should go so far as, you know, the state of Israel is trying to do that. I think, but that goes beyond the conversation on BDS and anti-BDS and what we're talking about here. And so I don't necessarily want to navigate down that direction. Okay. I just don't think we should be restricting that.
Okay. And on the subject of legislation, which is the main reason we're here, how does the ACLU see the current landscape, and what do you expect to happen, either federally, at different state levels, et cetera, when it comes to anti-BDS or BDS-related legislation?
I mean, the ACLU has come out and spoken against anti-BDS in the sense that, again, it's a clear First Amendment violation, but things continuously pop up. And so whether it's, I think there are some, I don't necessarily know what court cases are actually ongoing right now, but even in New York State, there have been some advocates who have spoken out against Andrew Cuomo's, Governor Cuomo's, I believe it was an executive order in 2016, where he said he originally wanted to blacklist companies that were in some way associated with the BDS movement, which was brought down. And then I believe there was something in the New York State legislature where someone was trying to, again, try to get through committee some sort of anti-BDS movement, but things haven't been moving there. And we've noticed, while there are certain states, as you mentioned, that have passed anti-BDS bills, there are a lot that have actually dropped the bills and are no longer considering them.
Is there any redress for someone like the professor who emailed from Hobart, the professor emeritus from Hobart who emailed the program today? What would you say to him about his concern that he can't testify on behalf of New York State as a forensic economist? He can't work for New York State anymore because of his support of BDS?
Mm-hmm. I'm not a lawyer, so I can't necessarily speak to that, but I think we could follow up if he's interested in speaking with our organization on that.
How to get in touch with you?
Genesee Valley at NYCLU.org.
All right. If you're on the phone, let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come to your phone calls next year. So Wendy, Jenna, Jeremy, Don, Bruce, a lot of people want to weigh in. We'll take your emails as well. As we talk BDS and trying to understand the broader issues attached to it, you're hearing Iman Abed, who's the chapter director for the Genesee Valley region of the ACLU, and a Palestinian American, Larry Fine, a former longtime CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester, here today speaking on his own behalf. Let's get that break and come back to your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, it's the Dialogue on Disability. A new film called Perfectly Normal for Me is showing at the Little Theater tonight. We'll have a conversation about the themes, including inclusion in recreational spaces for people with disabilities. What does accessibility look like? What does inclusion look and feel like? What's the impact? We talk about it next hour in our Dialogue on Disability. Welcome back to Connections. Before your phone calls, one brief comment. I know Larry Fine mentioned during our brief break that, I mean, I thought there was a point that you were making fairly well, but I think you want to put a fine point on it. Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to add is I talked about the Jewish desire for self-determination. I also believe in the very complicated context that currently exists after everything that's happened over the last 70 years, that the Palestinian people also have a right to self-determination.
All right, to the phones we go. Wendy in Pittsburgh first. Go ahead, Wendy.
I'll be right back. Oh, hi. Let's see. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Wendy.
Okay. Let's see. Just ordering a topic. I have a couple of points. Your comment about the Jewish people, you're talking about the Jewish government and not the Jewish people. It's like separating a mother and a child. The Jewish state is the same as the Jewish people. I just want to make that comment. You talk about it not being anti-Semitic, that you're talking about the Jewish state. It's like mother and child. It's like American people and American government. It's all the same. When people leave Israel, they're still Israelis.
But Wendy, can I ask a quick question about that? Because I confess here, again, I may be missing something. There are plenty of Americans who are who were unhappy, for example, with Barack Obama's administration. There are millions of Americans who are unhappy with the Trump administration. They are extremely critical when they're unhappy with it. That doesn't mean they necessarily are anti-American or dislike American people writ large, does it?
In Israel, it's different. Jews in Israel are Jewish people.
Okay, so I take the point.
I think the people who support the BDS try to differentiate between the government and the Jewish people. The Jewish people, even though they have strong feelings against the government, are still staunchly Jewish. The Jewish people in Israel.
Okay, does that mean there is nothing that the state of Israel could do policy wise that would make you criticize it in strong terms?
No, it's like criticizing your parent. You can hate your parent, but you still love them. You still love your parent.
Okay, Wendy.
And I just want to make another comment.
Sure.
I want to know why the BDS movement feel like they have to legitimize themselves by changing the minds of the Israeli government. Why don't they have a BDS movement against Hamas? Why don't they protest Hamas? The Hamas are their leaders.
Okay, Wendy, thank
Hamas
you.
Hamas is the leader of the Palestinians. Hamas could make Palestine a better place. Why aren't they have all this vitriol towards Hamas?
All right, Wendy, thank you for the phone call. There's two parts to that. I'm going to start with Larry Fine and ask you if you agree with her contention that with Israel, it's different, that Israel is the Jewish people and that it's mother and child, and that kind of criticism is inherently anti-Semitic.
So much of life is complicated and braided. I think that there's the Jewish democratic state of Israel, there's the Jewish people, there's the Jewish religion, and each of those has different nuance, and different people feel different connectedness as Jews to all the different parts of that. I think that the idea that as Jews, there is more articulate debate about politics in Israel than you will hear in most American cities in terms of articulate, knowledgeable, serious debate back and forth. As a parliamentary democracy, it's very complicated to figure out how to get the government to respond to what voters want. But I don't think that the idea of the Jewish state or Jewish peoplehood means that one can't criticize or note negativity about policies related to Israeli Arabs, to guest workers, to refugees, to people who live on the other side of what's currently the line, as well as any other argument one might have with their government.
Okay. Iman.
I think I just, she made a comment about why you know, support the BDS movement against the state of Israel, which was the BDS movement is strictly based on just what is happening in the state of Israel against the Palestinian people. I just want to be clear of that. This isn't necessarily something you can just apply wherever. The anti-apartheid concept and whatnot is something that that has been applied elsewhere. But in this case, I think when we're talking about BDS, we're talking about strictly what is happening in you know, against the Palestinian people by the state of Israel and the governing policies that have impacted them tremendously. Netanyahu actually used and made a remark, I believe, just last year again, where he said, you know, he was, or I believe a couple of years ago, where he said, you know, there was this, the Britain Students Union had come out in support of the BDS movement and suggested why come out and put all the support around the BDS movement when you could do it with ISIS? And I think it's an incredibly illegitimate argument. I think they're not the same. You can't even compare the two. And we are on an attack against ISIS around the world, for instance. And I'm not even going to go down this argument of who Hamas represents and what it means to the Palestinian people as well. And I think the terminology as well, it almost seems like Hamas is being used synonymously with Palestinians, which I've heard again in the past as well, which is completely wrong. And you know, I just want to acknowledge that. But I think deep down, again, we're talking about what are the governing policies of the state of Israel and why do we condemn those and why we should and why the BDS movement exists.
All right, beyond condemning, I know Larry wants to jump back in, but on that point, I think in a little bit more of a nuanced way, Jeffrey on Twitter is asking, if BDS is against Israeli government and not Israeli people, what mechanism should there be against Palestine's governing body's refusal to recognize Israel's right to exist? Should there be at least a movement or a statement, et cetera, regarding what Jeffrey is saying is Palestine's governing body saying Israel does not have a right to exist?
Are you saying that the BDS movement says that people have a right to exist? Because that's not true.
Okay. I think what he's saying is, should you spend time as well criticizing Palestinian leadership that doesn't recognize Israel's right to exist?
I mean, we could say that in any sort of movement, any sort of argument, should we be presenting the opposing side as well and, you know, talking about it in that sense? And I don't necessarily feel, I think when we're talking about even how far the state of Israel and the Jewish people have been able to get, and as far as, like, you know, making sure to get public support from around the world on what is happening to the Jewish people and what they believe has happened to them, the work has been tremendous. But again, I think that we know that the voices of the Palestinian people are so marginalized, especially around the world. And I mean, clearly going so far as, like, you know, someone like Angela Davis having an award that was rescinded from her from standing up with the Palestinian people. And again, fundamentally, I believe it's because we don't even know what the BDS movement actually is. We don't even know what it means to stand and solidarity with the Palestinian people, which to me, as a Palestinian living in the United States and seeing actually how a lot of our own legislators are, you know, going to AIPAC conferences and supporting the state of Israel, being public about it. My own, you know, our senator, Senator Schumer has been public about it. You know, Cuomo's public about it, we know that New York State is, for instance, a really pro-Israeli state. But it's also reminding myself that, no, I don't necessarily believe those who support the BDS movement need to necessarily come out and say what is actually happening. But I do think those conversations are happening. So I don't necessarily, again, but fundamentally, I think this is where we're going.
Okay. Fair enough. Larry?
Yeah, two quick things. First, I think the challenge about whether the BDS movement should also acknowledge that Israel has a right to exist is a sticking point, and it is a bit problematic. No one would expect Palestinians who are feeling and are in some ways oppressed, in many ways denied their rights under the current situation, have every reason to be complaining, every reason to try to use whatever leverage they have to make their cause known. Having said that, in my mind, the only solution is when the peoples recognize one another, when the peoples engage with one another. And that does take verbalizing, I see you, you're real, you have a right to be here as I do. And I'm not sure that necessarily happens. The other thing I wanted to mention quickly, going back to something that was said earlier, BDS does come out of some of the same strategies as the anti-apartheid movement. I think referring to Israel as an apartheid country is unfair and inaccurate. Israel has 25% of its citizens who are Israeli Arabs, non-Jews, who have every right to vote, who have multiple representatives in the government. Are they, as a minority, treated well? Not as well as they should be. But they have rights, and they are part of the polity, which in apartheid South Africa was not the case.
Okay. Iman?
Yeah, I actually just want to just quote somebody that you know, referenced the state of Israel as an apartheid state. And actually, in 2018, Dr. Clinton Swemmer, who was a South African diplomat to the UN, had actually said, Israel is the only state in the world that can be called an apartheid state. And that was in a Security Council meeting that was just had, I believe, in October of the last year. But again, referencing the treatment of the Palestinian people by the state of Israel.
Anything to add to that, Larry?
No, I mean, I suspect there are people with opinions other than mine. What I know of South Africa and what I know of Israel having been there, there are real issues about how minorities are treated in almost every Western democracy. And the issues in Israel are substantial and need to be addressed.
All right. I want to get back to your many phone calls. Let's work through as much of this as we can. Jenna in Geneva is next. Go ahead, Jenna.
Hey, I just was wondering if the guests could list some of the everyday brands, products, or services that they're asking people to divest in. And it seems like a lot of people are just really confused about what goes on in Israel and Palestine every day in general. So maybe what the everyday life for a Palestinian is like over there and how it has been for the past 20 years, 30 years.
Okay. I don't know the answer to... Well, so when it comes to boycott, you're asking for boycott what is essentially what you're saying?
The everyday items or brands that people here can stop buying or using to support this movement.
Okay. I don't know offhand. I mean, and I suspect you can find it on the BDS website if you're so inclined. Is that right, Iman?
Yeah, you can probably find... There's probably blogs out there as well that go so far as, like, updating, you know, what the latest products are.
Okay. Jenna, thank you. I want to go next in Rochester. This is Mikhail who's calling. Go ahead.
Yes, hi.
Yeah,
can
go
you
ahead.
Hear me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Oh, okay, hi. Yeah, I would like to make a comment for what Iman said, and somebody already spoke about that BDS is against the state of Israel and not against the Jewish people. And I want to reiterate that the Jewish people who live outside of Israel can live the comfortable life, the freedom that we have, a life without discrimination only thanks to the existence of the state of Israel. And if we think about Rochester, before Israel was existed, universities as quotes for Jews, you can study, you can go to university, study whatever you wanted. There were clubs, certain clubs, they did not accept Jews because of, you know, because of their Judaism. There were neighborhoods in Rochester that did not allow Jewish people to buy homes because of all of these things. So only after Israel was existed, only after Israel was able to show its strength to the world, after Six Days War, after Yom Kippur War, after Entebbe, after contributing to the world in science, in medicine, that's only the time that the Jewish people were able to live no longer with fear. And that's why if you do anything to harm the Jewish state, you're harming the Jewish people. So you cannot separate that. And I think this is something that needs to be really clear.
All right, Mikhail, thank you. Similar comments to Wendy's. So maybe what I'll do is sort of... kind of extend the when I think some of our listeners will hear this and say you cannot separate a government from its people, and again if you're struggling with that, here's a finer point added via email, and I think this is addressed to Iman. Herman writes, I have the highest respect for Iman, agree with her on most issues, and I've learned a lot from her speaking on a few occasions. Full disclosure, I'm Jewish. I am not a Zionist. The U.S. is my country, not Israel. I strongly disapprove of many of the policies of the current administration of Israel. For example, I see no excuse for continuing to build settlements in disputed territories. My reservations about BDS are twofold. First, as with all broad sanctions, those who are hurt the most are ordinary citizens, including those who did not vote for the parties in the current government coalition in Israel, people who have little or no say in the policies of the Netanyahu administration. I would be okay with sanctions targeted at individual politicians and leaders. And number two, while I agree with some of the demands of the BDS movement, BDS is too one-sided and doesn't address some of the root causes of the current situation. One reason why Israeli voters keep electing hardline politicians is that they feel threatened and have felt threatened since the founding of the modern state. End quote. So that's from Herman. Do you agree with Herman saying BDS, the boycotting, the sanctions, a lot of the pain is going to be felt by common Israelis, not the people in power making the policy decisions?
No, Al Jazeera actually just did a report and released that last year about talking about how some of the investments and sanctions, I mean, have been effective. And they haven't actually really moved or actually changed anything as far as like economic disadvantages on the Israeli people. What it has actually done is actually shifted the perception of what the state of Israel has been doing on to the Palestinian people. So the image is what's been changing more so than how it's actually impacting the market and how it's impacting people on everyday life. I wanted to address the young woman, I believe, who called from Geneva, she was talking about the everyday life of the Palestinian people. And I think, like, I was just there. I was just in Palestine in August of 2018. And I just to give you a clear, actually, was very interesting for me. But my parents had just bought a home very close to Jerusalem out there. And right outside of my house was actually a transit system that was great. It was some of the best public transportation systems that exist in the world, I believe. But it actually had a sign on it. And it was every day I would step out, I would see, and it said Jews only. It literally said Jews only were permitted to use the bus. And I, you know, every day walking out for nearly a month while I was there, I didn't necessarily ever see somebody who was in hijab, which is, you know, a very clear way of identifying if somebody was Muslim or if they were Jewish, or if they were veiled differently, of course, you could tell as well. But it was just very interesting just to see that every single day. But also the economic opportunity and the disadvantages on the Palestinian people, especially as we're talking about past where the wall is built, you know, where we're talking about places closer to Ramallah and whatnot, you can see a clear difference in the infrastructure of each of the towns and the villages where, you know, I mean, I remember passing through buildings that were actually being one of them was actually being bombed very close to Bethlehem while I was down there. But when you're talking about, as you're getting closer to places like Tel Aviv and you're talking about places like Jerusalem and whatnot, the infrastructure is dramatically different than what you've been seeing in the predominantly Palestinian settlements. And, you know, that in and of itself was a clear identification. Like it clearly identified to me as to where the money was being invested in and who was actually getting the best of both worlds, as we're talking about in the state. Yeah, I just wanted to acknowledge that as far as to the caller goes.
Okay. Larry?
Yeah, I'm kind of stunned because in my multiple visits to Israel over the years, I've never seen a bus that said Jews only. So I believe Iman. I've just never seen that. I think that there are real challenges for the everyday life of Palestinians. There are real challenges for the everyday life of Israelis, which is why the separation, border, wall, fence, about 95% of it is a fence, why it was built, because thousands of Palestinians and thousands of Israelis died from suicide bombings and response during the Second Intifada. So the issue of real fear for Israelis is real and legitimate, but none of that excuses not trying to resolve how two people can live next door to each other.
Okay. Are you concerned with Herman raising the ordinary Israelis being hurt by BDS? Because Iman is saying that's been examined and that concern that people may have is, I think what Iman's saying is that's been examined and it's off base, right?
Yeah, it says that there have been no economic disadvantages to the Israeli people.
Okay.
And I think the ability, some would say propaganda, others would say to express the message of BDS, has been the primary outcome from the BDS movement, is having its message delivered, again, from my perspective, without the context that it deserves. But I haven't seen or been aware of any serious economic impact on more than one or two Israeli companies.
All right, we're talking about BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and I want to get back to your phone calls. And David in Auburn is next. Go ahead, David.
With regards to one project, at least, is produced by a company in occupied Palestine. We can identify Palestine as a country or as an area. At the Green Star Co-op in Ithaca, there was a food product, hummus, I believe it was, that was produced there. And this became a big issue at the co-op. And the meeting that was held to discuss this, normally there were like six people that show up to these meetings that talk about these things. 50 plus showed up for this. And there were a good number of Jews that were really supporting our no longer buying that product. After that meeting, I had another meeting to go to, where I was a friend of mine who was Jewish. And I told him about what was happening at the Green Star Co-op meeting. And he is a Jew, by the way. He said, Israel is an embarrassment, which is exactly how I feel about it.
Okay, David, I appreciate the phone call and some of the perspective. It does sound to me, Iman, like this call for boycott. David is saying most of the time these meetings had only a few people, and this question of boycotting a product came up, and it was much more well-attended, much more emotional. There's a lot of fire that people feel in these debates about the proper actions. Does that any of that surprise you, hearing from David there?
No, not necessarily, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you think it's logical to say, okay, this hummus that ended up at our co-op, it's, you know, an Israeli product. If we're supporting BDS, we're not bringing this in anymore. I guess that's part of the movement.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's, but I think like you're really stretching here with like as far as like what products go. I think it's, again, it's like being able, this movement has been predominantly about making sure that that message is across. I think you were talking about it earlier, but it's we haven't had the opportunity, the Palestinian people have not had an opportunity, especially in the West, to speak about the injustices against the Palestinian people. And so whether or not, it's been an ongoing movement, and clearly I don't think people like Netanyahu, I don't think some of our religious leaders across the United States would be standing up and promoting legislation to restrict those voices of those who are in support of the BDS movement if this wasn't actually seen as a legitimate movement. I just don't think it would be, have gone so far. But I think essentially, again, when we're talking about in respect to what our rights are, and what's really surprising to me actually wasn't that comment in particular, but it was the comparison between the United States and dissent in the United States against the American government. And then when we're talking about the state of Israel and even, you know, Jews living within the state of Israel and their dissenting opinion of the state of Israel. And I don't think it's like a parent and a child. No, that's not what government is. And that's, we have every right to speak up against our government and to demand, you know, that policies that are unjust change if necessary. And if we can create a change in another country from the United States and we can support a movement like this, that is our First Amendment right. And anybody who's involved in this movement has every right to do so.
Okay, Larry?
I think the issue of free speech is clear. I think we both, you know, said very similar things about what people say. I just want to go back to the last caller's comment about Israel being an embarrassment. If you think about a state that's 70 years old and is one of the leading countries in the world in terms of technological innovation, health care innovation, scientific innovation, from a tiny, tiny fraction of the global population, Israel does a lot of wonderful things. And some of those are beneficial to the entire world. Many of them are beneficial to the entire world. And I think sometimes when we get too vituperative, whether it's about the American government, the Israeli government, the Palestinian Authority, without acknowledging some of the positives of life and benefits from what those countries do, we miss the whole purpose of living.
I'm going to get another couple of quick phone calls, and we're going to try to get as much of this as we can. Our phones have been lit up all hours. Susan in Rochester, got to keep it tight. Go ahead, Susan.
Yes, I'm calling regarding the increased religious control of Israel, the ultra-religious, and the hate mongering that's put out there from the religious right in Israel. The fact that they will teach in yeshivas that it's okay to, that the thou shalt not kill is only against other Jews. The fact that when we had the shooting at a Jewish synagogue here, that one of the predominant rabbis in Israel didn't call it a synagogue because it wasn't Orthodox. I think that when you mix religion and governments, it leads to real problems. Israel was supposed to be a secular Jewish state, and it is turning into more of a religious. I was part of the lawsuit here in Rochester for separation of church and state regard in the town of Greece. Mm-hmm. And I did not find support from the leadership in the Jewish community, including the Federation, in the sense that it was more important for them to raise money for Israel than it was to stand up for rights here. I think that's a real problem in the sense that we should be standing up for rights everywhere. And when you are only focused on rights in one country and you are saying, oh, we're victims here, but yet you are victimizing other people in other countries, it's a problem. And that's where I see with Israel, is that not only are Palestinians, but Jews that are not religious and are being basically dictated into having religious laws forced on them, even if they're not religious.
All right, Susan, thanks for the phone call. Larry, you want to respond to that?
Well, we don't have much time left, but I'll do my best. I think the first issues that you raised about some of the abhorrent statements that have come from some segments of the ultra-Orthodox community in Israel are just that. They're horrific. They deserve to be deplored. They're, They are not within the context of what I believe is appropriate belief. Israel being a parliamentary democracy, the prime minister gets selected by the parliament. Israelis, when they vote nationally, they take one slip for one party. That gives the religious parties a disproportionate amount of influence. Since the state of Israel was founded, no one party has ever received enough of a majority to stand on its own. Unfortunately, that's why it appears that the religious parties have more influence than their numbers deserve.
Okay. Susan, thank you for the phone call. I could have taken calls for another couple of hours, it appears, but I'll ask you for about 30 seconds apiece. What do you want to leave the listeners with as we think about BDS and all, you know, the legislation in front of us? Iman Abid, what would you say about this?
I just think about when we're supporting legislation, especially around whether it's in our own state or other places, to restrict a boycott movement, how does it set the precedent for other boycott movements to follow? This is not the first and it won't be the last. And what does that actually say about our own validation of the First Amendment, our own understanding of the First Amendment, and what rights our own elected leaders have to restrict that First Amendment right? And so I think I'd really like people to just consider that a lot more and to just recognize fundamentally what the BDS movement actually is.
Okay, Larry Fine.
In a world that's becoming increasingly polarized, with governments becoming increasingly unitary, I kind of just hope for all of us that instead of movements, we have conversations and real engagement with one another. It's the only way I know that we're going to find peace.
I want to thank both of you for taking the time to be here. And again, I know how sensitive the subject is and how it can sort of devolve into vitriol. I don't think that happened this hour, but listeners, I know we'll continue these conversations. Iman Abid is the chapter director for the Genesee Valley region of the ACLU, a Palestinian American who reached out and said, this is important. There's a lot going on. You know, the ACLU's on it. Let's continue to have conversations. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Larry Fine is the former longtime CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester. This hour here, representing himself, not the Federation. Larry, thank you. I always appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Short break. More connections coming up.